Hello, and welcome to 30 Pieces of Silver. I'm your host, Tom Littleton. You may have seen me a time or two on this network being interviewed with Brannon House. I'm really glad to be with you and introduce to you a new program, which is based on my website, 30piecesofsilver.org, where I have been able to provide research in detail, documentation of a lot of the stories that you would have seen on WVW through the recent years. Whether you're a conservative Christian or just a conservative constitutionalist who loves the American way of life, you should have an interest in what's happening in the church today, because what's happening in the church is really the taking down of the final institution of the Frankfurt School Marxist march through the institution. So what's happening in the church has an important bearing on all of our lives, because here we're facing things that in America that 10 years ago we would have never imagined being in our culture, in the White House, on Capitol Hill, and even in the pulpits of many of our once most conservative churches. So 30 Pieces of Silver derives its name from betrayal. So clearly, most of us are familiar with the idea of betrayal with Judas and how Jesus himself was betrayed with 30 pieces of silver, which was not a great deal of money. It was actually the price of a slave. So Jesus knew what was coming, and of course, he let Judas go to do what he had to do, and he said, do it quickly. So I guess that's a fair word to all the Judas that we find around us, the Judas Iscariots in the pulpits who are betraying us, those in the place of conservative trusted positions that are looking out supposedly for our rights and for our family, for our religious liberty and our freedom of speech. There are many, many betrayers in the room. So I would like for you to consider the things that you're seeing around you today. Cancel culture, how that's bleeding over into the church, the Me Too movement. I just recently did an article called Feminism Rising in the SBC, in the Southern Baptist Convention. The church is being invaded, it's being infiltrated, and that's one of the things we're going to look at. And some of these stories you will have heard before, but we want to go into more detail, show you more of the origins, and then update you on where these things are today and how they're moving through the very fabric of our society and unraveling it. And of course, sad to say, as the church goes, so goes the culture. In a culture that has been heavily saturated with Christianity, Judeo-Christian values, and even shaped constitutions and government, and have established the etiquette of culture and family and family norms, sexual norms, all these things, when they've saturated the fabric of a culture, once they begin to unravel, you are witnessing the unraveling of that very culture itself. So we see that already in Europe, as much farther down the line than we are in America. But sadly, America is catching up, folks. I think probably the last 5 years, maybe the last decade, we've been seeing this thing accelerate to at a pace that we could never have imagined, and that we're seeing things that loom over the future of our own children and concern us with where our nation's going to be, where the church is going to be in their generation. And we know that already God is certainly raising up disciples who will stand firm, and yet we know that there's going to be persecution. Cancel culture and a lot of these other things that are happening with the church and in the culture at large, they're really just shaping up for a bigger persecution and complete silencing of free speech. And as you'll see, there are many things that are shaping up to cancel out religious liberty among all of our other constitutional rights. And there are weapons that have been formed against us and honed for decades. And these things are, as I said, issues and problems that we've reported on this network. And on this program, on a more conversational level, I think we'll be able to look into how this happened. I want to share with you some personal stories and how these things manifest themselves in my own life, my own family, our church, and ministries that I had been involved in for years. So I have to say now, I've lost some friends because of my stand. It's not always popular to engage these issues and then step into the waters and step up to whatever microphone is open and voice who is responsible. Who are the Judas Iscariots in the mix? But I'll say this about those in our pulpits who have been willing to sell out the body of Christ and been willing to compromise, not only selling their own souls, but they're selling our futures, they're selling the household of faith, and they're selling out our children's futures. And the areas that are being infiltrated are so disturbing because they leave no refuge for the Christian and conservative. And so we're faced to being backed into a corner in ways that we never could have imagined. And you'll find most of this infiltration has come through in the realm of cultural engagement and politics and how Christians should engage politically. Probably nothing has done more to crystallize this movement against conservatives than the Trump era and the candidacy and then election of Donald Trump to the presidency. There's risen up a shame culture among Christian leaders, and they've done a very good job at pushing a narrative which I would warn you is not something that is born out of concern for biblical fidelity, but literally is born out of very well-funded left-wing, even cultural Marxist think tanks. I'll tell you, give you an example of one of those think tanks is the Institute for Advanced Studies in Culture. Now, we look at that organization and we can see that they have a great deal of influence among leaders like Tim Keller and Rick Warren, some of the biggest leaders within the evangelical movement. And so these guys have moved into into places of power, places of influence. And on this first episode, I would like to introduce you to the kinds of stories that we're going to cover. But this Institute for Advanced Studies in Culture, and it's kind of fun because Brennan and I, in past interviews, we get to share these things with you, and then we get to watch these people scrub their websites. And we know that they're listening because we're the only ones reporting it. And I'll say, you heard it here first on WVW, folks. Thank God for that. We're very appreciative of this outlet and even this opportunity for 30 pieces of silver to bring these stories to you more fully and to update them, give you a lot of the background and how we got here. But the Institute for Advanced Studies in Culture, you know, you go to the website and you punch in the about and bring up the drop down for the off of the menu. You go to the about page. Well, it openly said our institutional inspiration comes from the close-knit intellectual fellowships of the past, such as the Frankfurt School and the Vienna Circle. Our philosophy of inspiration comes, philosophical inspiration, comes from a thoughtful reappropriation of the theologies and classical philosophies and characteristically that characteristically champion the dignity of people, the pursuit of the just life, and the flourishing of human community. So I'll say this. After we exposed this, that about page within about 3 weeks was completely scrubbed, folks, and they changed and took out any reference to the Frankfurt School. Of course, we know undeniably the early 20s, this were the great thinkers of Europe and the Freudian types and these guys who knew that all they had to do was engage a revolution of words and of thoughts and promoting political correctness and basically isolating people because of their views. So you'll see this organization that owns its connection to the Frankfurt School in things like this. We reported about it, Civilitas. This organization actually surfaced part of the Lausanne movement, which is a very ecumenical group in the church. Rick Warren and Tim Keller, both the guys I'm talking about, leading compromisers, and yes, I'll call them Judas Iscariots in the church. Those guys signed this thing. The Institute for Advanced Studies in Culture helped draft this whole thing. Basically, what they're doing is pushing a redefining of Christian and conservative ideology. They're pushing Christians toward the middle, toward a third-way compromise. They're working on you, as I said, with the shame culture to bring about a shift in your, not only your moral views, but how they are expressed in politics and in the realm of cultural engagement. They're working heavily in our seminaries. That's the kind of thing that you're going to see. But this this very paper here called for you basically to stand down and not engage these issues in a way that would be divisive or lacking civility. See, that's part of the biggest tool here is to say, well, you know, you're being really unkind in the things you said. You're being divisive. You're not being civil. You're not helping to bring about unity. And then, of course, one of the big things they're going to pull on you is, well, you didn't follow Matthew 18 on that when you should have gone to that person, then gone and take two witnesses. Well, they'll call your hand on that, but I promise you, you ever engage these issues with Christian leadership, you are not going to see them submit themselves to Matthew 18. They're going to be holding you to it, but they would never submit to it because ultimately that process will end up with things being brought before the church. Well, that's what we're trying to do today, not just to the church, but to all of conservatives, those who love America, who love and covet the kind of life they've had as the future of their children. So we move into these things, into this realm, and you're going to find that the area of your politics and your political engagement and how you define justice and the ministry of the gospel is very important to these people. The guy who runs this, I just want to show you a couple of books, James Davidson Hunter, who actually runs this organization, the Institute for Advanced Studies and Culture, is very influential, and he has done a great deal of programming drafting the talking points. He did this book, To Change the World, the Irony, Tragedy, and Possibility of Christianity in the Late Modern World. Another one, Evangelicalism for the Coming Generation. So your kids are being targeted for this, and even those of you who are they see as pliable enough to engage these conversations, you're being called to recognize how your political engagement, your culture, an understanding of it, and how you speak up in that culture, what a problem that really is. So he also did this book, Culture Wars, The Struggle to Define America, Making Sense of the Battles of the Family, Art, Education, Law, and Politics. Now, this is an important book by this same Institute for Advanced Studies and Culture Leadership. This is the organization that owns their background and inspiration from the Frankfurt School. That is until Brandon House and I exposed it. These guys are pushing this narrative that, you know, in all these areas, as he described, in education, in family, in arts, in law, and in politics. So the idea of a culture war tells you as an American, as a Christian, as a conservative, that you are engaging a war against the culture. And instead of doing that, you should be civil, you should be sign the civilitas document. Sorry, it's a tongue twister. And engage this stuff in such a manner that you would be kind and you would be forwarding the purpose of the gospel. Well, the problem is the gospel is being redefined. And we see this through the Marxist agenda as it is infiltrating the church. And so it may seem that this is a very obscure idea, that there's a lot of problem among the people who are pointing this stuff out because they tend to be extreme, or maybe they're making guilt by association. I can tell you that. That's the main one that I get through the years is, oh, you're making guilt by association. But, you know, connecting the dots does not make you a conspiracy theorist. Identifying the people who are conspirators does not make you a conspiracy theorist. But for you conservatives who are not necessarily Christians or engaged in the Christian narrative, you know, you need to understand that this does matter to you because, as we said, the church is the last institution to fall. One of the ways you can tell that the church is so inundated, under attack and assault with all this, is not just the books you see here, some of the things that I'm showing you, but Christian media as a whole has been overrun with all of this narrative. Churches are abandoning the scripture for the talking points of these think tanks. And as you'll see, it's starting in the seminaries. And so this stuff, if it's coming in the seminaries, then it's definitely going to be flooding into your pulpits, because they're training the guys that you're going to be sitting and listening to Sunday after Sunday, who are choosing curriculum for your kids. So this is a big deal. These samplings of books, that's just a very small taste of what's going on. But the biggest thing you can see is that you are being uncivil and waging a culture war when, in fact, the culture is waging a war on conservatives and on Christianity and on all Christians. So these Marxist ideologies from the Frankfurt School and other think tanks, another example, the Acton Institute, they are putting in the actual curriculum. I found this some time ago in a book that I'll show you in a later episode, the New Evangelical Social Engagement, how that book actually pointed out that by 2009, this stuff was flooding into our seminaries. So we have to look at this stuff and take to heart, where does this all leave us? The Acton Institute is really helping push Hayek and Austrian economics, faith and work program. These are things that we'll get into more later. So they're preaching all these Frankfurt School ideals and ideals of wrapping them in conservatism, wrapping them in conservative theology. And so you see how the social justice movement has been running through the church. This is actually a Lifeway. This is the Baptist bookstore. This is 2010, which was a time just after the money had begun to flow in. Here's a little Sunday school program complete with DVD and a little book, Seek Social Justice, Transforming Lives in Need. So this was a small group. So it even has in the packet a nifty little poster that you can fold out and put up on your Sunday school class door. So these are the kind of things that are coming, all born out of the same hub of people who are seeking to influence the church. So think about this, folks. Where do we go from here if the church then is so saturated that it's no longer a safe haven? And so where do we find retreat and refuge and repose? Where are we refreshed if not in the household of faith? Well, we have to, I believe, we have to look to the opportunity to establish new churches, to do home church, and really break out of the institutional church, because sadly, a lot of this stuff is so infiltrated that I really believe that it's beyond repair, that it's beyond recovery. Now, nothing is too hard for the Lord, folks, so we're not saying that it's absolutely impossible, but some of the things I'm going to show you now will give you an idea of just how deep this infiltration is. So there's nothing more black and white than the LGBT agenda. That's sort of the modern version of the gay agenda and the homosexual agenda that was started in earnest in our modern culture in 1969 with the Stonewall riots, which, by the way, Stonewall, that inn, that bar where this riot took place, is actually on the National Park Service list for historic places. And I know that because I used to work in some ministry that was based on historic preservation. And little did I know, while working with that ministry and actually getting involved with the National Park Service, that in 2010, again, the same pivotal point, that they engaged a LGBTQ history initiative for the National Park Service. So that now is a landmark with equal status to the Lincoln Memorial or George Washington's Mount Vernon home. So that's, and little known to most people is that that place, that Stonewall Inn and the riots were a matter of pushback from the gay community who were mostly involved in drugs and prostitution there through the bars. And then this was the second assault by the police raiding those bars because the mafia who owned and ran those bars actually were not paying the police who were corrupt, who were getting a slice of the action. They had not been paying up. And so that's what actually caused the police to crack down. And then on the second one, the I think Checker Club was the first one, and then Stonewall. And the reason I know all this stuff, I used to live in New York, and I did have to deal a lot doing evangelism there with the gay community. So I know these people, I know this history, and to think that something this seedy and sordid now has made its way to the National Park Service, and you and I are paying for it, and now this LGBTQ agenda is actually flooding into conservative evangelical movements. And like I said, this is the most black and white, anti-family, anti-culture. I mean, this thing collapses cultures. Once you see the mainstreaming of perversion and normalization of it, you know that we're on the fast track with Rome and Greece and other cultures into a rapid fall into the abyss. And yet that's what's happening. And so around about 2007 is when they gathered together through some international meetings, the whole idea of LGBT, and then you see the letters Q, A, I, and so forth. It's like the alphabet soup now of inclusion. This is the big tent sexual minorities. And so the idea is that you pull these sexual minorities together and then you make sure that everyone is promoting their rights and their cause, and they're protected. And so the church is actually abandoning the Word of God in order to protect the LGBTQ rights. And now we're abandoning transformation for inclusion and welcome. So the change agents have filled the church, and the Equality Act is sort of their final legislative move to completely crush their opposition, to crush free speech, to redefine certain scriptures as hate speech. All this stuff is moving so rapidly because it's being accommodated by those who are Judas Iscariots, who are in places of leadership within the church. So sadly, the Equality Act sits poised. It was one of the big commitments of the Biden administration during Biden's campaign, and whatever that was that happened in November, well, they called it an election, but whatever that was, once it let him get the keys to the White House, he promised to bring the Equality Act up, and he's promised to sign it. It has made its way through the House since then, and it sits somewhere in the Senate. And we'll talk more about that in a later episode. But also, I want to show you, if you're going to really follow the money, I think, and we've reported a lot about this here on WVW. You really want to follow the money, you need to look to faith-based partnerships. Now, here's a couple of Judases for you. That's Rick Warren on the right, and then Pope Francis on the left. And I do know a lot of conservative Catholic people, and they're concerned about this Pope. He is a known Marxist from Latin America, Argentina, and he is trained in the skills of the and tools of the trade for cultural Marxists. And then, of course, Rick Warren, he is a disciple of Leadership Network and of a guy named Peter Drucker, who was the one who actually discipled through Leadership Network. Peter Drucker's legacy was brought into the church and then used to disciple thousands and thousands of pastors. Well, you may not know about this because it was invitation only, and they were looking for these young, innovative guys that could take on the church and they could step in and really be able to make this happen, you know, to bring about a new paradigm church. So Rick Warren's one of their main disciples. And so he actually helped bring this socialist ideology and economics into the church. And he then ends up working directly with Bill Gates and with the Global Health Initiative. In 2005, they helped launch Peace Program or Peace Plan, which is where he had taken all of the fortune he'd made from the purpose-driven books, purpose-driven life, purpose-driven church, all of that helping you find your purpose basically in this, seeking social justice, right? So the church has been set up for this for a long time. The Catholic Church has been influenced by the very same ideology. Leadership Network had a lesser-known Catholic outreach. And, of course, they said doctrine didn't matter. It never mattered to these people. So here we are, and we're lost in this narrative of activism and talking points. And so faith-based partnerships gives the opportunity for churches and ministries to get what? Your tax dollars. Think about that, folks. If you want to know where your tax money is going, you want to know where all these big stimulus packages are, we're going to talk about this in detail and how this thing really came about, how the Obama administration took activist dollars by the billions and poured them through every federal agency directly into the faith-based programs that are established in offices of in every federal agency. Now imagine that. every federal agency. And so those are all under the umbrella of Homeland Security. Imagine that. And then churches can give, apply for grants. They can redefine their mission into these ideals for social justice and for racial reconciliation and for more feminist ideals and of course, inclusion and welcome for LGBT. These things then are directly influenced by these faith-based dollars because of one phrase, non-discrimination. So churches and conservative organizations, missions organizations, they cannot hold on to their conservative ideals. As a matter of fact, they can't even do ministry because, in fact, ministry is forbidden. Any explicit religious activity is forbidden in these. So I would call this faith-based partnership, this three-legged stool that Obama has sent into the mix here and then now is being resurrected, as we'll see in part two of this initial episode, 30 Pieces of Silver. You'll see that they're reintroducing this thing again to pour more and more billions of dollars into it. And the hope is that people like you and I aren't going to notice what's happening, the betrayal that's taking place, and how our lives are being undone, and how the church is being undone. So we're being bought with a price, this 30 pieces of silver, and sadly, there's little that can be done to stop this train because so many of the major leaders in Christian faith and even in other religious faiths around the world are being able to buy into faith-based partnerships domestically here in the States and then their outreaches through international ministries and also to have these ministries be able to get corporate funding. So the three-legged stool is actually government, who's controlling it all, calling all the shots, then big business, and then the social sector, which is churches and nonprofits. So you see entire missions organizations. We're going to be looking into this stuff, being overrun with this kind of stuff. So you want to follow the money trail. The faith-based partnerships are a good place to do it. If you realize how this stuff has happened, how quickly it's happened, and yet it's happened undercover, you're never going to see these dollars showing up in your local church coffers. And of course, churches don't have to provide 990s. The denominational groups are considered churches. So they only give you the reports of the giving and the, you know, the fundraising and so forth. But there's billions of dollars that have come through every federal agency into these ministries. So there's really no stopping it. It seemed to be that the Trump administration did fund these programs some, but nothing like the Obama administration had. And as you'll see in part two, the Biden administration has resurrected these programs and all that's going on with it. Now, because there's no ministry involved, I would say it's a Ponzi scheme beyond the fact that it's fraud, because in the end, the money goes away. The money goes away. And the federal money, the public money, and then the church is exploited of its resources. So here we are in a time when 30 pieces of silver seem to be a fair price that people have been able to put on their own souls and on their own Lord and Master, to sell out their future and the future of their children. So where does this leave us? Well, we need to know what's going on. We need to engage these issues. We need to share with others. We need to stop giving money to these organizations that are taking our tax dollars. You tell them, I already gave at the office. So you need to engage these issues so you can be aware. So we're going to come back on 30 Pieces of Silver in episode one, part two, and talk more about the details of what this program is going to cover and where all this stuff is coming from, and most importantly, where it's going. We appreciate you joining us here on WVW Network, 30 Pieces of Silver.